Line of research of string field theory is not what most of the people in the community are doing, so I guess that I should have quite a long introduction. So most of my talk will be introduction to several things that I'll be using. For one is one of them, main of them is the string field theory, but also some peculiarities that I need of the RNS formalism. And then only at the end I'll go to talk about this work that I'm doing, which is still at the status of a work in progress. If at any stage I'm doing something which is not clear enough and you want me to say more about it, I'll be happy to use the Blackboard. And if you want to read more about recent developments in string field theory, there is this review that I had with Udi Fuchs that you can consult. Okay, so what I'm doing is open covariant string field theory, and why should we do it? So we would like to know, to get an answer to the question of what is string theory? And a possible way towards it would be to find some non-perturbative definition of it. And another thing is when we are doing superstrings and doing calculations, there is a problem with covering of supermoduli spaces and how to go beyond two loop or three loop or four loops. There are always issues with this, and maybe if we'll have a reliable string field theory, we can somehow overcome this difficulty. Now, both these motivations can also bring some people to say the opposite. For one thing is that this thing is something which is too naive to do, because, well, string theory is not particle physics, it's not just field theory. We should look for a not the simplest thing to do, but for something more elaborate for finding this solution of this question. And the other thing is that also this problem, just to avoid it by constructing something maybe just too naive, and again, maybe that just implies that I will not be able to find a reliable string field theory, but still I try. So what is string field theory? Conceptually, it's the most straightforward generalization of what we do in particle physics. So in field theory, what we have? We have an action. From the action, we can read the quantum scattering processes, and also we can see some non-perturbative effects, such as solitons and so on. And so how do we do this second quantization? I just look at an analogy. So suppose we have just a single particle. It has some classical equation. What do we do with it? We first replace the variable. Do you see the dot, or should I use a? Okay. We replace the variables by operators. That's the quantization, the first quantization. Then when we get the Schrödinger equation, we just reinterpret it as a classical equation of a field. We find some action from which we can derive this equation. To this action, we add interaction terms, because this would probably be a free action. And these interaction terms should respect some symmetries, which we suppose should presumably be renormalizable, and so on. Then with this action, we quantize it again, and that's the second quantization. So in the simplest example, that would be the equation that we start from. That would be the Schrödinger equation, which is just a Klein-Gordon equation. And then we can just have an interacting Lagrangian, which obeys the symmetry and isn't renormalizable in a four dimension, which is this Lagrangian. So we want to do the same for a string theory. Now, in string theory, the form of the interaction is fixed from what I'm referring to as the first quantization, that is from the Wurchet perspective. And this is a good thing because it constrains the plausible string field theories, because both the free theory and the interaction are already known to us. This gives us predictive power, because if we find some action that gives us all these scattering processes correctly, then it means that we probably have already what we are after, which is the non-perturbative definition of the theory, which we can use also for other stuff, such as reading the finding classical solutions and so on. So what are the ingredients of the string field theory? So we have a string field, The string field lives in the space, including the ghost, because we are looking for a covariant formulation, and we refer to it as the Hilbert space, although strictly speaking, it is not a Hilbert space, it's some linear space. The string field carries ghost number one, and we can just expand it in modes, and we have an infinite number of modes. And we can just write it like that. The fields are T, which is the tachyon field, the photon field, and so on. And we think of this object as a classical object. So how do we add interaction to this story? We have the string fields, and the string fields interact by half-string gluing. So we take half-strings and glue it, and I'll explain it in a moment how it is done. This gluing is performed by two operations, which we refer to as integration and star product. The integration gives us just a string field. We give the integration a string field and get a number. And the star product takes two string fields and gives us a third string field, which is the result of these string fields after they have interacted. Another important ingredient is the BRST operator, which is a derivation of the star product and of the integral. It means that this set of operators, the star, the integral, and Q, they obey several axioms, which are the natural axioms, sort of, say, the integral of Q of something is always zero, because it's like an integral of a derivative. And the Q of the star product of two fields obeys Leibniz rule, the graded Leibniz rule, and so on. And everything is linear, and so on. OK, and very important thing to remember with this algebra, which is defined by gluing, is the special role played by the string midpoint, since it is invariant under the star product. If I'm taking strings and just glue the half of the first string to the half of the second string, what was in the middle of the first one and what was in the middle of the second one is still in the middle of the resulting string that I am getting. Okay? So now let's look at pictures which say the same thing. So the string field will be the configuration of the string on this unit circle, and we can define it by inserting a vertex operator at minus infinity time, and it does not have to be an on-shell, so it's not, strictly speaking, really a vertex operator, but inserting some operator here, and that's equivalent to defining the state here, and we distinguish the left and the right halves of the string. Now, this is the standard z coordinate that we are used to, but there are other coordinates which can be useful in string field theory. One of them is just this circle, which we can get from this one by a Möbius transformation. And then this string is mapped to this half of the circle, and the rest of the half plane is mapped to the other half circle, and then we see that we see manifestly the symmetry between the two strings, the string that comes from minus infinity and the one that comes from plus infinity, and then we can say put a test state here and consider what's going on with it. And another coordinate system which is useful is this coordinate system, which we call the cylinder. A cylinder coordinate, it is also referred to as Schnabel's coordinate, although he was not the first one to introduce them, but his solution uses this coordinate system heavily. So here these two lines are identified, and the history of the string from minus infinity to its current situation is what we have between these two lines, and the rest of the cylinder, which is at the same size, is reserved for the test string field. So This coordinate system is very useful when we consider objects such as the integral of the star product of two string fields. And this one is useful for the star product. I'll show you that soon. Now, for the integral, I already mentioned that we take a string field. In this case, it will be just the star product of two string fields, C1 and C2. And we want to get a number out of it. So in order to get a number from a configuration of a string here, say, that we can describe by the insertion of C here and the insertion of some test string at the other side, the most natural thing to do would be to calculate the CFT expectation value of this configuration. So that's actually the definition of integration, of the integration over the space of string fields. It's just a CFT expectation value. Okay, are there any questions so far?
This is a Moyal star product.
So it has the properties of the Moyal star product, and in fact it can be diagonalized as an infinite product of Moyal products.
Yeah. So this is also used in the non-commutative field theory.
Yeah.
So this means that basically string field theory is no local.
Yeah.
What about causality? This has been a problem for many years.
So you have to think how to think about causality in this context, and there were lots of debates about it from the works of Woodard and Eliezer more than 20 years ago, and there were papers about it by, well, Erler and Gross from 5 years ago, and this issue is not closed, but that's
well,
not where I'm heading.
It proves that the operators of string field theory don't commute.
Well, yes, certainly they don't commute.
That's why they causality.
Okay.
This is a fact.
Okay.
I don't think there's any question about it.
No, I mean, that's not the question. The question is how to interpret it and whether it is bad, whether it kills the theory. So that's the thing which we can debate. But that's not where I'm heading. Okay. So other questions?
When you evaluate the CFT expectation value, do you assume that those string fields are on shaft?
No. I mean, I just haven't. I think of what I have to the right side of here as something which propagated from an operator inserted here, which can be an arbitrary operator of Gauss number one, as I said. The string field just has to be classically of Gauss number one. And I insert something also here. It is defined also not for Gauss number one. I mean, say here a C1 star C2, then you will have different Gauss number. And then you insert an operator here, and you have to define only the boundary conditions on the rest of the circle. And because we're doing open strings, then depending on the dibrand that we consider, this will usually be just a Dirichlet or Neumann boundary conditions.
Yes, what exactly do you mean by evaluating CFT expectation? But do you not mean just doing the normal worldsheet patterns for some insertions?
Well, the worldsheet here is just the circle. I'm not summing over surfaces and all that.
So that fixed circle.
Yeah, so I have a fixed surface. In this surface, I insert this operator C. Now, if I'm using some coordinate system like this one or this one, I have to transfer this operator insertion with the way it transforms under the conformal transformation which I'm using. So these are conformal operators. They have non-trivial transformation. And then I have some surface. And in the surface, I'm calculating just genuine CFT expectation value. And that defines me the meaning of an integration of a string field.
How do you think about it in flat space? So
in principle, you don't have to think about it in flat space. So what I wrote before, the expansion of the string field, so this is an expansion in a flat space, but you don't have to assume that. And that I just wrote that for having some sort of a feeling of what sort of an entity is the string field. But the only thing that we have to assume is that we have the BC Gauss system, and the rest is just a conformal field theory with the correct with C equals 26. So in the bosonic case, which I'm describing so far, and that's all.
got too many questions. Witten introduced the idea of a knit point.
Yes, so.
So the reason, one of the reasons is the serious problem of instability.
Of what?
Instability, I think, because you have an infinite number of derivatives.
Okay.
And one possible way around this is to introduce the knit point during the space debate. But what's the justification for this after all these years? Because really, you should take the whole string.
Okay, so as I said, because we are doing a covariant formulation, we have the BC ghost in our disposal. And this BC is what fixes already, takes care of all the symmetry of the string that we have. So after we introduce the BC, we don't have really worry about this issue of reparametrization. And then it is fine to say that the midpoint has a distinguished role. Now, from some perspective, still this introduces something which you may refer to as singular behavior, say if you look from it from a perspective of closed string field theory. But with the open string field theory per se, there are no problems with it. And then you have a theory, and if you want to check it, you have to check several things. One is whether it gives you correctly the scattering amplitudes, which it gives. I'll talk about it in a moment. And the other, whether you get the non-perturbative data correctly. And again, we have it, so it seems that this theory is fine, the bosonic theory.
You need closed strings to get gravity.
Yeah, so you have the closed strings in loops. Yeah, so you have them in loops. So all the scattering amplitudes, all levels are reproduced correctly of open strings.
What about gravity?
So you don't have the closed string degrees of freedom as asymptotic states, but when you sum over surfaces, you don't sum over surfaces here, but when you do the string field theory, you do the expansion of the cubic term, it gives you higher terms, higher than cubic, like just like you do with any other field theory. When you contract them, you can describe the result by surfaces which have closed strings as intermediate states. So you have all the interaction, and indeed you get a full covering of the moduli space. Only the moduli space is covered only once, and you get all the scattering results correctly. So it means that you deal with these intermediate closed strings correctly without having to introduce them as asymptotic states. But really, strictly speaking, if you really want to do the true story and be able to describe a changes of a closed string background, then you'll better do closed string field theory, which is more complicated. Indeed, it is not; it cannot be described just by a midpoint interaction like these theories. But that's not what I'm doing here now.
You risk getting killed by ghosts.
By what?
You risk getting killed by ghosts.
I have problems with the ghosts. I have lots of problems with them. And the biggest problem for me in the context of what I'm doing now is the fact that I don't have a Hilbert space, I don't have a positive definite inner product, and I'll talk about it, but again, what we do here is just to assume that there is some resolution to this issue and work with this hypothesis. So you can say that it's too bad of an assumption, but if we get some nice results, then maybe it's not too bad, and maybe we should look for some other resolution. Okay, so more or okay. Okay, so as I said, this coordinate system is particularly useful for evaluating the star product. And why is it so? So again, a reminder about the midpoint and problems that it might cause. So how does the star product work in the cylinder coordinates? Suppose I have this psi1 here, which is defined in the cylinder coordinates. I have a psi2 here, which is defined in the cylinder coordinates. The area between the blue and red lines in both cases is where the string field really lives. The rest of the surface, which is glued, so this one and this one, and this one is reserved for test states. So what I'm doing here is just to take off this rest of the surfaces, which we refer to as the local coordinate patch. Glue these strips together and add one coordinate patch to what is left. So what we are left with is this larger cylinder, and we have a Psi1 here and Psi2 here. That's where we did the gluing. Now this line is not special in any way. These two lines are again identified, and we see that the strip length, if we don't take into account the local coordinate patch, is additive. We can now, when we have two operators here, we can use their OPE, the full form of the OPE, in order to represent this state as a single insertion here. And another thing is that we can use one more conformal transformation to make this cylinder shrink it back to the size of the standard cylinder. And here the midpoint is at infinity in both cases, so we see that the midpoint is still at infinity, so we see manifestly this thing of the invariance of the midpoint under the star product. Okay. So about the midpoint. So as I said, it is invariant under the star product. There are actually two midpoints because we can use the doubling trick. So the standard coordinate system, we have one midpoint at I, the other one is at minus I, and it can be useful, this fact. At the midpoint, we should allow only zero weight primaries to be inserted, because generally we have conformal transformations which diverge at the midpoint. So if we have anything which is not a zero weight primary there, then we don't know what to do with it. If we multiply two string fields which have a midpoint insertions whose OPE is singular, then we get infinities. So that means that we should somehow limit the space of string fields so as to avoid this sort of insertions. Now here comes the problem that I mentioned before, that we don't really know how to describe this thing, because we can take an insertion at the midpoint and describe it as a sum of insertions at some other point, say by a Taylor expansion. And if you give me a string field, which is very complicated, I cannot immediately tell you, say, just by considering the way the coefficients behave or any other thing, just tell you whether it contains something which really lives in the midpoint and or can be harmful in other way or not. What? Well, it can be Xi. Well, I mean, in the bosonized RNS. So I'll give a couple of examples later. So I mean, you can in the RNS at least define some things, but like picture changing operators. Okay, so picture changing operators, they're all zero weight primaries. But, okay, so there are not so many operators which are of this form, and it already implies that there are not many things which you can insert at the midpoint. And say, if I'm allowing picture changing operators, I'm in trouble, because the moment they collide, they produce singularities. So the simplest resolution of this constraint is to assume that there are no midpoint insertions on string fields, but presumably you allow in the action to have some insertion of an operator, because then you don't multiply them, and then if you have some, say, a picture changing operator at the midpoint, then that might be fine as part of the definition of the action. But if you allow string fields to contain this operator insertions, then you'll probably end up with divergences in the action, and that would not be good. So how to define the space of allowed string fields? We don't know it. And it's relevant not only for the issues which I'm covering here, it's relevant for things like proving sense conjectures for Schnabel solutions. So There are proof source sense conjectures for Schnabel's solution, starting with Schnabel's original paper, then Okawa, Woody Fuchs and myself, Schnabel and Elwood. But all these things, all the conjectures, it is based on assuming some behavior of the string field, which we cannot really quantify or justify. So that's a problem of string field. Okay, now let's just describe the bosonic string field theory. And the star product will be implicit from now on because there's no other way to multiply string fields. The action was given by Witten, and it's this action, it's a cubic action. We have the kinetic term and the interaction term. We can derive from this action the equation of motion. Okay, that's that. Okay, we can describe, we can derive from this action the equation of motion. And we also have a gauge symmetry. So if you remember the example of the particle, in the case of the particle, we did not have any symmetry, any gauge symmetry for the first quantized theory. Now we have it already in the worksheet. We have this symmetry. So we need to identify the exact states with zero, and the equation of motion is this equation of motion. So we need a theory which is a nonlinear version of this worksheet thing. So this is the nonlinear term that we have for the equation of motion, and this is the nonlinear addition to the gauge transformation. And the commutator here is a graded commutator. In this case, because lambda is even, it's really a commutator, and it's a star commutator. So what's written here is actually psi star lambda minus lambda star psi. And okay, and if you want to think about it, you can think about it as if you have a open string coupling constant multiplying this term. So you, and then the same thing will be on these two terms. So you really see that from perturbative perspective, you get to the free theory at the zero coupling.
Any field theory with a free psi-cute interaction.
Yeah, so any local, and as you said, it's not local, so you have a huge gauge symmetry, so you may hope that you don't have the problem in this case, but of course not in all the cases where you have two problems, they just cancel each other, so you have to check whether you have a problem or not. And
I think I know the answer. Why did
Witten
insist on
the
psi-cute interaction?
OK, so why not add higher term interactions? So if the string field is of Gauss number 1, then a higher powers of the string field will not be of Gauss number 3. And since the integral is a CFT expectation value, it will just be 0, because you need to have 3 Gauss mode. So that's the simplest way to see that that's what you need. Another thing is that this this action has some nice well, interpretation, just the Chern-Simon action, and the axioms obeyed by the string field are almost all of them are the same as the Chern-Simon case. And the Chern-Simon is topological, so here, because of the huge amount of gauge symmetry, you also hope to kill all the bad stuff.
Field theory,
gauge symmetries
never kill the ghosts. It's the other way around.
Yes. Okay. So no, but there are two types of ghosts here. So far we were talking about the first quantized ghost. Now since I have an action, it has a huge gauge symmetry, I should introduce ghosts, well, second quantized ghosts, and don't think only about the classical action, and think how to treat this gauge symmetry in a systematic way. And then I have to add ghosts or antifields, and I hope that I'll be able to mention that as well. And then these ghosts can kill the gauge symmetry, and because the theory is non-local, then the regular wisdom from field theory does not necessarily apply. Also, since I'll be talking about superstring field theories, there is also a non-polynomial version of superstring field theory, which is due to Berkowitz. And then you say, but still it is based on the Witten star product, but then you may say that maybe this theory is able to avoid better the problems that you mentioned, but I'm not sure that cubic theories are doomed. I think that the problem here is the fact that because we don't have the closed strings on shell and we don't have in this formalism a way to change the closed string background, that's what might lead to problems of unboundedness from below and so on. So again, what we really would like to have also from the point of view of the motivation that I gave, like the issue with the supermoduli, is to have a closed string field theory, and that will not be of this form.
So I mean,
for you, you can think about it as a toy model.
One last.
Yeah, sure.
Not my last.
For the five seconds.
It's been 23 years that people have been studying this problem.
Yeah.
And what has proved that you can get rid of the ghost set, as far as I know?
That you can get rid from?
Rid of the ghost problem. It's still here. It's just a long time.
Well, I don't think that most people that are doing research in this field are not particularly care about it. So you may say that their focus is wrong, but also we have string theory for so many years, but still we do not have any proof about how scattering amplitudes behave beyond the three or four loop, depending which paper you recently read about it. Despite the fact that there's a small group of people which really care about it, most of the researchers in the field do not care about it, you know that.
This is something I don't understand.
Okay.
Anyway, okay. If you have ghosts, you can prove that the universe could evaporate in an instant. Right.
Or faster, yeah.
This is even faster. This is a serious problem.
Yes. Okay, so from this perspective, I think that this question is interpreted by me, at least, as the question of what is the space of allowed string fields. And I know that some people that are doing this are thinking about it. Say, another Rostelli is now thinking about maybe a way to define this space, but we still don't have anything close to really a strict definition of it, although we have some clues about it. But string field theory has some other successes, so maybe there is something in it after all. Okay? So the gauge symmetry can be exponentiated, and that's, as you would expect, the finite form of the gauge transformation. And again, everything here is defined by just expand it and look at and just replace all the products by star products. And the success of the theory are by the fact that it reproduces the known scattering results that was initiated by a paper by Giddings and then a couple of other papers. And we have now also analytical solutions of this equation. So this equation seems not extremely complicated, but you have to remember that the square here is a star product. The psi is a collection of infinite number of fields, classical fields. So it's not that simple. And the issue with studying analytical solutions started after Schnabel introduced the solution of the tachyon vacuum. And we now have also other solutions describing marginal deformations and so on. OK, so that was how much time do I have, by the way?
How much?
25. Okay. So now I have to remind you some facts about RNS superstring and particularly the issue of picture number. Because my motivation is to have a superstring field theory, because we already have the bosonic string field theory for more than 20 years. Okay. So zero modes of the super ghost imply a generation of the vertex operators. We know that for the BC system, we have integrated and non-integrated vertex operators. So in some sense, at least, the zero modes of the beta-gamma system should give us an infinite degeneration of the vertex operators. And this is referred to as picture number. The easiest way, as far as I understand, to consider this picture number is using the bosonized variables from this classical work by Friedan, Martinek, and Schenker. So beta and gamma are bosonized in this way, and the xi and eta are fermions. Phi is a boson, e to the phi is a soliton of this boson, and we define the picture number in this way. There are other definitions, but this is the most, the best definition, because it does not mix the ghost and the picture more than necessary. So the picture number of eta is minus 1, xi is 1, and when we have e to the n phi, its picture is n. Now the string field depends on the matter, which in the regular case is x and psi, but again, it does not have to be the x and the psi's. And we have always the Gold system, which is the BC, and the eta xi phi, which replaces the beta gamma system. And the Hilbert space is what is called the small Hilbert space. That's a very important fact. The small Hilbert space does not contain the zero mode of xi. Why? Because in the bosonization formula, we don't have this xi naught. We have only d xi. So the zero mode of xi is not there when we consider the beta gamma system, which is what we really have. So one would may say, OK, it's just one fermionic mode. How bad can that be? Well, it makes a huge difference if we consider the small Hilbert space or the large Hilbert space, which is just the sum of the small one and xi naught times the small one. OK? So the large Hilbert space is, in some sense, twice as big, but it's not really twice as big. It's just very different. And now I want to see how can we describe the superstring in the large Hilbert space. So as I said, usually it is not described there. It should be, the string field should live in the small Hilbert space in the simplest way, but we can maybe find some other representations which use the whole large Hilbert space. In some sense, it is more natural when we think about the xi, eta, and phi system. So just an interesting property. When we considering the large Hilbert space, we have this zero mode of eta, which previously was just zero. So the zero mode eta naught, it has trivial cohomology in the large Hilbert space. So that's a fact, and we can see this fact by the fact that there is this xi operator, and the anticommutator of xi and eta is just one. So xi is just a contracting homotopy operator of eta and that of, for eta naught, and that implies that eta naught has a trivial cohomology. So, but why would we care about it? Now, another thing which might be more surprising maybe is that Q also has trivial cohomology in the large Hilbert space. So if someone needed a proof that the large Hilbert space is very different from the small Hilbert space, that's the proof, because we certainly don't expect to have a Q with a trivial cohomology. And again, we can see it by the fact that we can describe a contracting homotopy operator. So this is the contracting homotopy operator. Again, we can define it at an arbitrary point z. And we have this xi here, which implies that this operator does not exist in the small Hilbert space. So in the small Hilbert space, q is not trivial. But in the large Hilbert space, it is. OK, so it seems that there is some sort of a symmetry between q and eta naught in this large Hilbert space. And in fact, it's more than that, because q and eta naught, they anticommute. And eta naught is also a derivation of the star product, an odd derivation, just like Q. So it seems that the theory is symmetric with, I mean, the space that we have is symmetric with replacing Q and eta naught. And since eta naught has this operator xi attached to it and Q has this operator p attached to it, it might be interesting to consider what's going on when we take Q with xi and eta naught with p. So if we are considering this q with xi, we get a new conformal operator, x. And this operator is a primary of weight 0. It has all its quantum number trivial, except the picture number. So it adds 1 to the picture number. So we define x to be the picture-changing operator. If we consider eta naught with p, We get another operator with almost the same properties, except now the picture number is -1. So why is the inverse picture changing operator? Now, x and y, they both live in the small Hilbert space. So it means that they are killed by eta naught. And they are both closed. It means that they are both killed by q. And one of the properties for one of these operators is trivial. So since xi is a q commutator, x is a q commutator, it is trivial that it is killed by q. The fact that it lives in the small Hilbert space can be derived by using the graded Jacobi identity, and the other way around for y. Now, it is important to know the OPEs of these operators. So x and y have just an OPE that starts with 1. So if I increase the picture by 1 and then I decrease the picture back, I'm getting back to where I started, which is very good. But if I try to use x in order to increase the picture twice, I'm in big problems because I have a singularity in the OPE of x with itself. Same goes with y. Y and y also has the same sort of singularity. And the other operators that we've been using, which are p and xi, they all have 0 as their OPE. Now, we can still use x in order to change the picture twice. We just, since we describe this x of z, we can just plug x of z at 2 different points, and then there is no singularity. Only we are getting an object which is non-local on the worksheet. And that might be some source of a problem. Okay. Now that we are familiar with these main objects that live in the large Hilbert space, I want to study the question of how to describe vertex operators in the large Hilbert space. So the simplest option is just to consider the small Hilbert space. So in the small Hilbert space, this is the way that we consider vertex operators. But there's also another way. We can take the same and define it in the large Hilbert space. So what should we do now? We should insist that this QV lives in the small Hilbert space. And we should also identify V with objects which are Q of something, which lives in the Okay, so let's just remind that the large Hilbert space consists of 2 copies of the small Hilbert space. This is one of them, and this is the other one. So we can decide that instead of describing the small Hilbert space vertex operators by this copy, we describe them by this copy. And then this equation just translate to this equation. And because we want to eliminate somehow the all of the small Hilbert space, we just say that we identify V also with V to which we added this this piece. But there are also other options. Another option is to consider the large Hilbert space at a fixed picture with this non-xi naught component, just like in this case. Just like in this case. But instead of considering q, we're considering q tilde, which is q minus eta naught. Now, if we take this given picture and consider the standard gauge transformation with a lambda, which is of a picture that can give us the result that we need regarding the picture number, and we consider the various options for the picture number, we see that at the end of the day, we get exactly this constraint. So this is another way to describe the vertex operators. And finally, this was introduced by Berkowitz when he was looking for a way to relate RNS and pure spinor variables. And in fact, he also showed that it is possible to consider a bounded range of picture numbers then changing the picture is just a gauge transformation. We can increase the picture by taking a lambda, which is just C, times the minimal component of the V, which we want to change, or decrease the picture by taking a lambda to be just minus P times the maximal, the component of the maximal picture number that we want to change. And in this way, we can just squeeze or decrease the range of a picture number that we consider. And again, picture number, picture changing is just gauge transformation, and the vertices that we get are just the same from their physical content as the standard formulation of vertex operators. Okay. However, if the picture number is not restricted, we can build a contracting homotopy operator. So this is just one contracting homotopy operator. We can build more contracting homotopy operators. So the picture should somehow be restricted. Okay, now let me describe you cubic superstring field theory and its problems. So if we're considering the small Hilbert space, the expectation value is non-zero only for picture number minus 2. So Witten, immediately after proposing the bosonic theory, proposed also a superstring field theory. So this is a theory that he proposed. So the picture number of psi is minus 1, so this term is fine. But for the interaction term, we get here minus 3. So we need somehow to have a plus 1 to balance it. So he suggested that we have to plug this x, which is the picture-changing operator. It has it's a quantum number perfect in order to balance this picture. And we can use it as a midpoint insertion. So again, I remind, the midpoint is very special. It is invariant under the star product, under everything which we are doing. So having x as a midpoint insertion is just as if we change the definition of the integral for the interaction term. And then all the properties, the nice properties that we have, the algebraic properties which make this theory analog to Chern-Simon theory, they still hold. Okay. However, not long after this proposal, it was realized that because of the singular OPE of X with itself, this theory is wrong. Just by iterating the gauge transformation, or by evaluating tree diagrams, such scattering amplitudes, we get the x's from the midpoint to they meet another x which is at the midpoint, and then it produces singularities. So this theory is wrong. So how can we modify this theory? So a modification was proposed by two groups just 1 year after. After the problem was found. And the idea was to change the picture and work with psi of picture number 0. And then this will be the action. And we have to put the minus 2 picture number by hand. So now we introduce a double picture changing, double inverse picture changing operator. Again, it has to be a midpoint insertion. But now, because psi carries picture number 0, then we don't have problem with the gauge transformations, and we don't have problems with the scattering, at least at the tree level. Still, lots of many people had problems with this action. So one of the problems was that y minus 2 has a non-trivial kernel. So one may then say that the equation of motion that you get from this action, which contains y minus 2 as multiplying the equation of motion which you really want, is not equivalent to the equation of motion that you really want. And in order to overcome this difficulty, Berkovich and Siegel on January proposed some modification of this theory, which has a non-trivial extra sector appended to it, and there were some problems with this proposal, which I took care of later. But at any rate, I don't think that that's really a problem, Because that's a problem only if psi can have some sort of a midpoint insertion as part of its definition. Because then you can have it, this midpoint insertions meeting this y minus 2. But because we cannot allow arbitrary midpoint insertions on the string field, so we don't know how to define the space of string fields, but we know that some restrictions should hold, then it seems to me quite sensible to assume what I proposed before, that the string field should not be allowed to have any midpoint insertions. And then this problem does not exist. Another problem which was mentioned is that there's more than one possible y minus 2. Because we have two midpoints, we can plug the y minus 2 at one midpoint, at another point, we can plug y here and y here, and there are also other options. So, in fact, there are infinitely many ways to define this y minus 2. But as I showed earlier this year, all these choices, at least classically, are equivalent. So again, that's not really a problem. Moreover, there is the theory which is usually considered more reliable one, which is the non-polynomial theory due to Berkowitz. And Udi, Fuchs, and myself, we show that at least up to some subtleties, these two theories are equivalent. The non-polynomial one and this modified cubic one, when restricted to the Nevesh-Schwarz sector, which is all what I'm considering so far. So again, it seems that we are on the right track, but we are not on the right track, because collisions of picture-changing operators do occur also for this theory if we insist on having the Ramon sector. So the Ramon sector cannot be of picture number 0, because the Ramon sector is always at half integer picture. And then at least this group, they suggested how to use how to extend this action in order to have also the Ramon sector. And then the picture changing operators, they enter the gauge transformation, but they don't cause any problems at the linearized level. However, they do cause problems if we just iterate the gauge symmetry, the gauge transformation several times. So alpha is the Ramon string field, which is supposed to be at the picture minus half. This is the a gauge transformation which they proposed, and we have x here as a midpoint insertion, and he is the gauge string field in the Ramon sector, lambda is the gauge string field in the Nevesh-Schwarz sector, and just consider this simple case, and we start with the configuration, we iterate it again, and we end up with this x squared, which, as you know, is a problem. Of course, we should consider not just iteration of the linearized transformation, but consider the nonlinear, the full nonlinear transformation. But all that it does is just to rescale the coefficients, and when you do it, you still get this x squared, and you just get a essential singularity for the gauge transformation for the. For the gauge transformation when you consider the Ramon string field. So this theory also should be modified. Okay, so now we want again to start from scratch and build a string field theory which will not suffer from problems. So how to construct a string field theory? The string field is just an off-shell generalization of the vertex operator. So what we should do is to see what are the ways to describe vertex operators and see which one of these definitions we can extend in order to derive a string field theory. So the cubic theories that I had so far, they extend just the small Hilbert space definition of the vertex operators, but they suffer from collisions. Witten's theory suffers from collisions immediately. This modified theory suffers from collisions only when we have the Ramon sector and only after some iterations, but they both suffer from it. There is another string field theory, which is the non-polynomial theory, which I mentioned already a couple of times. This theory extends the Xenot-based construction. So, what's going on here? Okay, so you remember that we had the small Hilbert space and C naught times the small Hilbert space, and the physics of this theory lives in the small Hilbert space. The physics here lives in the other space. But as I mentioned, we can also work with this operator Q tilde, which is Q minus eta naught. And we had two ways to do it, one at fixed picture number and one with some bounded picture number. So the option with the fixed picture number cannot work when we consider the Ramon sector for constructing a string field theory. But we can define a theory that extends the Q tilde formulation with all picture numbers allowed. So, as I said, there might be a problem there because we have a contracting homotopy, so we have somehow to not allow this contracting homotopy operator to act on our space. So again, it's some sort of a restriction on the space of string field which we should impose. And just like we did not know how to impose those restrictions for midpoint issues, I don't know how to impose this restriction for the theory that I'm introducing now. And I don't expect that I'll know this soon, but at least morally speaking, it is sort of a similar problem to what we have in string field theory from its first day. So the action should look like that. Instead of Q, we have Q tilde, and we have some midpoint insertion, so it looks very similar so far to this Y minus 2, the theory based on Y minus 2. But the action should be defined in the large Hilbert space. So this integral here is not a path integral, it's just a way to distinguish it so that we'll know that we are considering CFT expectation values in the large Hilbert space, not in the small Hilbert space. So we can, of course, have gauge transformations, and this will be the gauge transformations. And the inclusion of the Ramon sector is straightforward and natural. We just replace psi by psi plus alpha. So psi is of Gauss number 1, but of an arbitrary picture number. The integer picture numbers are the Nevesh-Schwarz string fields. The half integers are the Ramon string fields. And if we expand the coefficients, we get exactly the interaction term that you expect to have from Ramon and Nevesh-Schwarz string field. So we have here in this theory some sort of unification of the Ramon and Nevesh-Schwarz string fields to a single string field. But I still didn't finish defining this theory because I still didn't tell you what is this operator O. Okay. So it must be a midpoint insertion. Yeah. It must be a midpoint insertion for many reasons. And the gauge transformation should be symmetry, should really be gauge transformation. So this gives also a restriction on this operator insertion, which I'll mention soon. And we want to have some sort of a correspondence principle here. So we want this theory to reduce to this modified cubic theory of Plychov and collaborators and Arefeva and collaborators. So we know that this operator should have this xi, which reduces us from the large to the small Hilbert space, and it should have then the y minus 2, which is what we had in the modified theory. But we can allow some more stuff. And the more stuff, it's most natural to assume that there'll be just higher or lower order picture changing operators. Now, in order to ensure a gauge invariance, we have to demand this that Q tilde and this insertion commute. That's all that is needed in order to have the gauge invariance and to be able to derive the equation of motion as we want and everything. Now, we can expand this O in coefficients, and this gives us some sort of recursion relation relating these insertions. And we can just check a few examples. So we see that other than xi times y minus 2, we have also xi as an insertion, we also have p as an insertion, and generally we have all the picture changing operators from minus infinity to plus infinity multiplied by xi, and only the regular part of it, and that the sum of all these expressions is the insertion that we're after. Okay. And picture changing, just like we had in the worksheet case with when working with this Q tilde, is just a linearized gauge transformation, and we get a non-zero action for arbitrary picture number. But we have a very complicated gauge symmetry, and we need to deal with this gauge symmetry. So how to deal with this theory, with this gauge symmetry? So for that, we need to work in the BV formalism, which I'll just mention it shortly. It's sort of a covariant Hamiltonian formalism, and it's particularly useful in cases like what we have here, when we have a reducible gauge system. We have, in fact, an infinitely reducible gauge symmetry. And we have to use the equations of motion in order to close the gauge algebra. So we need to do the BV formalism. And for the bosonic case, the master action gives just this equation, which is identically zero, which is not complicated to see it. And the action that we have is just the same action that we had before, the classical action of the bosonic string, which is this action here. The only difference now is that psi is of an arbitrary ghost number instead of being a minus, instead of being of a ghost number one. So the ghost number one is the classical string field. The ghost number zero is the ghost, the second quantized ghost string field, and so on up to minus infinity for ghosts of ghosts, etc. And the positive ones are the antifields, and they are all together all the fields and the antifields together sum to give one object which is odd and which is the let's call it the quantum string field. Yeah. I can what? So you can add higher interactions now in principle, yes. There is a reason, because you need a theory that obeys the master equation. And when you don't add anything new, you get a system which obeys the master equation. But of course, as in any, say, Hamiltonian formulation, you can do now a canonical transformation and find another action which will not be cubic, will be something else, and will still obey the master equation. Okay. Now, in the case at hand, everything works just the same as it worked for the bosonic case. We can still work with a single string field psi, which is composed of the fields and the antifields together. And this gives a very aesthetic result. The fields and the antifields are unified to a single object. This single object has all ghost numbers, all picture numbers. So it has both sectors depending on the difference that we consider. So we have Ramond and Neve-Schwarz unified. And we have the complete Hilbert space to our disposal. And that's quite different from the case of what's going on when one tries to do the BV formalism for the non-polynomial theories. So currently, with Nathan Berkovich and Barton Zwiebach, I'm studying this issue as well. And there, we cannot unify the fields and the antifields, because one of them is odd and the other object is even. They don't cover the whole space. We have just two triangles in the space of a possible picture and ghost numbers and so on. So we still get a very nice and elegant construction in this case as well, I hope, but this is somehow more aesthetic. Okay. So now I just want to summarize by saying what are the challenges that are left for me in order to complete this project. Well, some of these challenges will have to wait for someone else maybe to complete. And what are the successes, I remind the success that we already have in this formalism. So the biggest challenge, which I didn't mention and nobody somehow asked me about it, is to define these multiple picture changing operators as zero weight primaries. I wrote a way to define this multi picture changing operators as by a recursion and taking the regular part of just iterating a regular picture changing operators. This gives us operators of zero weight, but they are not primaries. And the question which most bothers me now is how to modify the definition in a way that will give me primary for an arbitrary picture number. The second issue is how to see supersymmetry in this formulation, and it is very related to the previous question. I will not go into it now. The third issue is the issue of the space of string fields. So I said we have now a question. We cannot allow just arbitrary picture number without any restrictions on the behavior of the as a function of the picture, because we'll end up with a trivial cohomology. That's not what we want. So we have to define somehow the space of string fields. But as you okay, so this is the operator of the which may serve as a contracting homotopy. But as you remember, this was also a problem anyway, the problem of defining the string field. And I think that maybe someone in the audience will agree with me that that's the biggest problem with the string field theory. So that remains a problem. And then the next thing would be to try to gauge fix, which in this case is also to fix the picture, but now we don't have to fix the picture at a single picture component. We can maybe consider Gaussian distributions as the function of the picture or some other stuff, and quantize. Now, the BV formalism that I mentioned briefly was for the classical master action. We'll have to consider the quantum master action. This is problematic already in the bosonic case, so there's lots of work to be done here. So that's a challenge. What did we gain? We have a picture changing as a gauge transformation. This is very satisfactory. Because we use this correspondence principle, then all the classical solutions, including the vacuum solution, the marginal deformations, and all the good properties that we have from the standard modified cubic theory, and there are lots of good things there, we have them in this formalism as well. So this formalism might be a new one, but it already has lots of successes. And then what I just mentioned now, that we have a unification of the Nevesh-Varsh and the Ramon string field, and that we use the whole Hilbert space. So again, it's something very aesthetic in favor of this theory. Another thing which I did not write, which is in favor of this theory, is the fact which I mentioned, that this Q tilde operator was first considered by Berkowitz in the context of the pure spinor theory. So maybe this formalism can somehow be related also to the pure spinor or superstring field theory by Berkowitz. So, okay, so that's all. Thank
you.
Just to say, I have a question.
Is it
urgent? So the basic reason for doing all this.
The what?
The basic reason historically for doing all this, as far as I understand, is to get a UV complete theory.
Well, yeah, to get a non-perturbative definition of string theory. Yeah.
So by definition, if it's UV complete, it's not local.
Okay.
Because local theory is not UV complete.
Okay.
And this leads you into a lot of issues. For example, the canonical Hamiltonian formula is not easily used.
Is not what?
You cannot use easily the canonical.
Well, I can use BV formalism, which is what I intend to do, which is
a time ordering of points. In all cases, UV, the local thing is not UV complete in the sense that you have to renormalize, you have to subtract infinite constants. This theory of the loops are finite. The loops are finite in this theory.
I don't know.
Presumably.
Well, I don't know if it should be finite or just renormalizable. I'm not sure about that. But for now, we still not. There's still lots of work to be done before we can see that we can define this theory quantum mechanically. So if I'll be able to see that I can define scattering amplitudes and loop amplitudes correctly with some renormalization scheme, I would be very happy. I'm still far away from that.
The reason it's UV complete is because in the vertices you have entire functions.
Okay.
Which is exponentially suppressed any divergence.
Okay.
In Euclidean moment.
Yeah, okay. We have that. Yeah. That we have.
But this also leads you to all these problems. Because entire functions are infinite derivative operators.
Yeah, that's definitely with infinite derivatives. Okay, so if we have just a finite higher derivative theory, but in this case there is still hope, and this hope is even more than just a hope because of this large amount of gauge symmetry, and we do able to do this Hamiltonian formalism, well, not the standard Hamiltonian formalism, but the BV formalism. It works fine, at least classically. So there are some clues that might suggest that there is hope. I certainly cannot promise you that I'll be able to solve all the issues which I mentioned as a challenge.
Anyway, that's a good question. Hopeless hope. Why don't we thank Michael?
We can talk again.
Okay.